Thinking Liberty, episode 26.
Welcome to Thinking Liberty, the podcast that explores lifestyles of freedom-minded individuals. Join us as we discuss work, hobbies, health, learning, and more while living a travel-orientated lifestyle. Be curious, be open, be inspired, be free. And now, here are your hosts, Zach and Sarah Varnell.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Thinking Liberty. We're coming to you from our home outside of Atlanta, Georgia. And as always, I'm Zach.
And I'm Sarah. And we have been very busy with the house and gardening. We've been planting a lot of flowers and fruit bushes and things like that. So it's been pretty exciting getting to learn more about gardening. And then recently I was in California and it looks like we may be spending some more time out there for work, just depending.
Sadly, I didn't get to join the first time.
Yeah, but if it becomes a longer term thing, Zach will get to go with me. But it was pretty cool. Hung out with one of my coworkers and really got to experience more of like the value of networking and making connections while you travel. We went out there and met up with some people from a bar association that we were going to do a talk for. And we ended up going out to some cool little bar. I forget the name of it, but it was out in Oakland.
Didn't it sound like it was more like a car dealership or a mechanic than a bar?
Yes. I was like, oh, it's so nice that you guys are going to buy me a car. No, but they treated us to drinks and the beer was made locally. And they had little weird snacks. Like they had these weird little pizzas that every single one of them, and I'm not kidding, every single one of them had a slightly fried egg on it. And I guess it was just one single one. So I guess you were supposed to like break up the egg and then smoosh it around all over all the other pizza slices.
Yeah.
But like there was no like just pepperoni like or anything. So if you're picky eater, it was not.
Yeah, I've definitely seen pizzas where it's like you're supposed to move the egg yolk around onto the whole pizza. But yeah.
Yeah.
But it would have been nice to have at least one option that's not too crazy.
Yeah.
It's like how every, you know, Chinese place has chicken teriyaki in case someone's not feeling very adventurous. They should have just had cheese or pepperoni, but
yeah, whatever. But it was fun. It was a good night. It was fun hanging out and getting to meet people, and you know, those are the kind of experiences like that. You know, it's just, it's more meaningful if you can meet people and actually go out and do things with people, I think, sometimes. So it was a good reminder of that. And yeah, exactly. And they were able to show us some good places to go and told us about some other things to check out. So it was fun. So I think we'll definitely have to do that more when we get back on the road again and try to meet up with people. But I love San Francisco, and I do hope that we get to spend more time out there and explore California more, maybe do some weekend trips if we do stay out there for an extended period of time. But that's still all up in the air right now. It just depends on how some things at work go. But I love San Francisco, but it's kind of funny to me, like all of these towns that have like unique cultures and unique vibes, they always think that like everything that's unique is centralized to that city. So one thing I heard a lot was, that's so San Francisco. But it was said in reference to things that you see everywhere, like even like, you know, Chattanooga, Atlanta, Seattle, Chicago, like all of these cities have these things and they're going, that's so San Francisco. And I wanted to be like, no, that's so San Francisco. But everyone there,
but even really that's not so San Francisco. People do that.
I guess everywhere that's true. Yeah. There's definitely some people in Atlanta who like to think that Atlanta's super unique, but I don't know. I mean, you know, there's definitely a different vibe to each city, and there's definitely a good reason to get out and explore these different cities. But
yeah, I don't think you're trying to say that every place is identical.
No. I mean, the way people interact with you, and there's different things to see and different things to do. You know, Atlanta has the Coca-Cola factory and their huge aquarium and Centennial Olympic Park and a really cool music scene. And San Francisco has the Golden Gate Bridge, and that's unique to them. You know, so there's definitely some things that are unique. And there's, I mean, there are so many parks in the San Francisco area. It's really amazing. But yeah, my little tangent that I went on.
Well, I'm excited to find out if you're going to be going to California more, and hopefully it'll be for several weeks at a time rather than like 3 days like it was last time.
Yeah.
That way I can justify going with you and staying the whole time, yeah, bringing Ollie with us and just hanging out there for hopefully a lot longer.
Being near the beach again. I do miss the beach. I love this house and I love our pond, but I do miss the beach.
Yeah.
Someday we're going to have a beach house.
Yeah. The time before last when we were out there together, we stayed in the Sunset. And I know that's where you stayed again.
Yeah. And it pretty much. Well, I was a little bit farther.
Okay.
Like I wasn't within walking distance of the beach. Like we were when we went.
Yeah. We were basically across the road last time. We just crossed a, I don't know, sort of like a four-lane road or two-lane road. I don't know. And then we were on the beach on the Pacific.
Well, I'll take that back. I guess technically I was, I think I was within walking distance, but by the time you get back from like being out with clients and stuff, if I would have walked there and walked back, it would have been dark. Mm-hmm. So I was not about to walk in a neighborhood that I wasn't familiar with alone at night. That was the only thing. But yeah, it was really fun. And it's really cool to see how fast Oakland is changing too. My coworker was telling me that a lot of people from San Francisco are kind of moving out to Oakland. So it's kind of cool seeing the shift and seeing all the new things pop up and visiting, you know, when you haven't been for a while to a city and seeing what's changed, but what's still the same is a really cool experience too.
Nice. Well, hopefully next time we do a podcast or here soon, I'll have some travel stuff to share with you guys rather than all the fun being on Sarah. So our guest today is Courtney Nichols from travel-bash.com, which I now learn how to say on audio.
Yeah, during
and,
the interview.
Yeah, you'll see that on the interview that I had no idea how to say that. And now I feel like I've got it down a little bit. But she is an avid traveler. She's lived all over the place. And she specializes now in destination weddings. She's had one herself, and she's helped plenty of people plan them and organize them. And I was a little bit surprised to learn that, you know, not every destination wedding is just to, you know, Jamaica or Mexico, but she was talking about destination weddings in Thailand and Africa and places that you wouldn't normally associate with, you know, going off to get married in. So I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I feel like, you know, we learned a little bit about destination weddings and what all goes into it. And also just like we got a little bit of an insight into, you know, how she is as a traveler. And I feel like, you know, she's very into it. And
yeah, it was really cool to hear, you know, kind of the natural progression from just being somebody who's very social and friendly and outgoing and super into traveling, and how she took those qualities and just made it into her career. So it was really cool to hear about that story as well. And she's got a lot of tips for you and a lot. I mean, there's so much information in this episode. If you're thinking about a travel destination wedding or a destination anniversary or baby moon, as we'll talk about too, definitely give her website a check as well, because she has a lot more information on there. A lot of really good blog posts that we touched on as well that we'll link to in our show notes page.
Yeah, I think another aspect of it was I really liked, you know, hearing about her entrepreneurship, because she seemed like she had been looking for something to do and then found that she could do what she was already good at. Like she had lived all over the place, traveled all over the place. She was already the go-to person for her friends to ask about travel tips. She had had a destination wedding. So she, you know, seemed to be an expert in that after having one. And now she's able to help people, and that's her business, is helping people do destination weddings and traveling. So I thought that was just a perfect fit for her. And it's great whenever somebody's able to find their niche and it's, you know, right in front of their nose, because it's what they were already, you know, great at. So let's go ahead and go into the interview with Courtney. So, hey, Courtney, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. So we introduced you a little bit already, but do you want to go ahead and give us a rundown of, you know, who you are, what you're all about, how you got into travel? And specifically, you know, destination weddings. Did you have one? Things like that.
Yeah. So thanks for having me. I'm owner and founder of Travel Bash. And I kind of got into travel planning and destination weddings when I myself was planning my destination wedding. So I am A former destination wedding bride, got married in Riviera Maya, Mexico. But I have a background in kind of fundraising marketing, which when you start out, you kind of do these high level fundraising events. So I knew I didn't want to just do regular events, but also the crazy part is my husband is a college basketball coach. So we moved 5 times now in the last 9 years. And I also lived overseas. So I was kind of like that go-to person for friends and family. They're like, she lives everywhere. She's gone every weekend. Like, what is she doing today? So then I just kind of took my passion and, you know, love for travel and mixed it kind of with my event experience. And then with the whole destination wedding, I'm like, oh, this clicks, you know, it made sense, especially after planning mine. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Definitely just go ahead and do what you're probably already good at and they're doing for people for free. So,
yeah.
So you said you travel a lot and you've kind of been all over the place and moved a lot. What are some of your favorite places that you've either visited or some of your favorite places that you've lived in?
So I think my favorite place, like if I could move anywhere tomorrow, it'd be Italy. I don't care where it's Florence, Venice, like I just need to be in Italy. I love it. I actually lived in Hungary. So my husband played professional basketball 2008. So I lived in Pax, Hungary, a little village town. So it's very interesting. It's not like the rest of Europe. Budapest reminds me of New York, and that's probably what people know and they hear about the big city. But again, the village town, we're about an hour from there. And there was so much culture and rich history. So I love that as well. But I've lived in, I was born in Tennessee, grew up in St. Louis, lived there, went to 2 different universities. So I've lived in Virginia and then went back to Tennessee, lived in Hungary. I've lived in West Virginia, South Carolina, Louisiana, and now to Florida. Isn't that crazy?
Wow. Yeah. We're actually planning a trip to Italy in September. So maybe we should get some travel ideas and tips from you.
It'll
be our first time. So I'm really glad to hear that was your answer. It makes me feel a little better about our decision to go there. Or really not our decision. Our niece picked it, but I think she did well.
Perfect. You won't eat American pasta again. Well, maybe you will. I eat it, but I'm like, after you have the real thing, you're kind of like, what?
Kind of ruined for you, I guess.
Yes.
All right. So tell us a little bit about, so you're making a business out of helping people plan their destination weddings. Do you have any sort of, you know, stories from that? Maybe a best experience, a worst experience, or even like a typical experience that people can expect?
Yeah. So, and I always like to say, like, I don't consider myself like a travel agent. Like, I feel like you say you're a travel agent, people are like, what? You know, with technology, internet, like your business is dead. It's kind of like a personal travel concierge. So I focus on romance travel, which again is your destination weddings and kind of your honeymoons, anniversaries. But one experience with a destination wedding, it was so funny. The weather is a, you know what, some days. And when you're planning a destination wedding, you never know what to expect. Most of the brides are usually choosing places in the Caribbean or Mexico because you don't want to scare your guests and say, hey, we're getting married in Thailand and grandma's never even been out the country. It's also one of those places where it's easier to get to. So you're not on 12-hour flights changing 3 times. So you can get to Mexico, you can get to Jamaica, you can get to Turks, you know, in a reasonable hour and still feel like you know what's going on. You know, you're not too jet lagged and you're kind of like, okay, they speak English and that type of thing. So most brides are really kind of sticking to kind of Caribbean, Mexico, and then Europe. But going back to the weather, flowers were flying, tablecloth, because the one thing that I also provide besides just booking and make sure your guests get there, I also will come with you. So my bigger groups, I travel with them and they have on-site planners there that will take care of kind of all your details. So you don't get overwhelmed and feel like, oh my goodness, how am I going to plan all this stuff like a traditional wedding? It's kind of set up to where you tell them everything you want, need, and they'll say for this price, you can get X, Y, and Z. So at the destination wedding, the decor, it was just crazy with the weather. I'm like, is it going to be a tsunami? Like, what's going on? And I've heard that if it rains on your wedding day, it's good luck. But I'm like, this is not rain. This is like, you know, what does that mean if it's not raining? It was like a downpour. So that's one kind of, I wouldn't say bad experience because it wasn't really on the planning side, but more of kind of what to expect. You've got to be a flexible bride. If you choose a destination wedding, if you're type A control freak, it might not work out. I know my husband would say that I'm a control freak type A, but he has no clue. Like, you got to kind of go with the flow. You got to know that people on Caribbean time, there is a, such a thing as Caribbean time. Like, nobody is going to respond to you right away like we do in America. You have your phone, and then next thing you know, you get an email, and then you respond right back. So you have to be able to be flexible, make adjustments, and that's kind of how you roll. So, like, the experience with planning destination weddings, you have to know that going in that, for one, you don't know what the weather will be, so you just kind of roll with it. You can't be uptight. You have to be flexible because things happen, because you got to think you're also – I'm in travel, so your flight could be delayed. You could lose a bag. Your great uncle cannot make it to the wedding after 5 years. You know, there's all these worst case scenarios. But I will say, most of the time, let's say 90% of the time, you don't experience any of that. And it's beautiful. The weather's perfect. You know, everyone gets there. They have no problems. Maybe a few delayed flights, but you're pretty good. You know, I haven't had too many, like, crazy situations. I think on my destination wedding myself, my bridesmaid who made my sandals, we went barefoot, but there were like some beads and sandals, and I was getting ready to go, and I'm like, hey, where are my sandals? She's like, oh, yeah, you left them in Ohio. So, like,
oh, no.
You know, little things like that. Yeah, I'm like, okay, well, I'm barefoot anyways, and I had another pair of sandals for my reception. So it's just those type of things that could happen in a traditional wedding. You know, somebody forgets something, or you know,
it sounds like just travel in general, but with the added stress of a wedding and other people, because, you know, you can go to another country and experience their crazy weather that you've never experienced in the United States and have all sorts of things go wrong. But at the same time, if you're in a place that's built around tourism, they're used to fixing problems and they're used to getting you places.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it sounds like that sort of mix.
Yes.
So do you see that, you know, brides who are choosing destination weddings are typically people who just already love to travel? So, you know, it's an obvious choice for them, or are they doing it to branch out and be more adventurous, or just because it was always their dream? Like, what are the motivations behind most people that you see?
Yeah. So surprisingly, you would think that if you chose a destination wedding, it would be people that travel all the time, like go places, but to be honest, Zach and Sarah, like literally most of my destination brides don't even have their passports yet. It was one of those decisions where it comes down to cost. You know, traditional weddings nowadays are over 30 something thousand dollars, like basically the cost of tuition in college. So destination weddings are growing faster because nowadays no longer are parents paying for weddings, and brides are getting married, you know, later in age. And they're looking for an option that provides them a way to express themselves and have their personality reflected, but they don't want to go in debt, you know, over the one day. So I believe that when people are first getting engaged, they don't know they're going to be destination wedding brides. You know, there are some that they love travel, and they're like, oh gosh, I can't imagine myself not getting married anywhere else but on the beach. But there's also a misconception that a destination wedding means you're only on the beach. You can get married in the mountain. You know, a destination wedding doesn't necessarily have to be by the ocean, but it's more about being cost effective, and it's appealing because it's affordable and it's unique. It's something different. Most of everyone that has destination weddings, they've seen weddings or been invited or in weddings that suck. You know, to be honest, they're traditional. They're like stuffy. They have a bridesmaid dress that they hate. So they're kind of going against the norm. They're like, let's do something unique, kind of hashtag worthy, that still isn't going to cost me, you know, my whole life savings.
So do destination weddings typically cost more than traditional weddings, or can it come out about the same? How does that work?
So the price, it kind of depends. So I have brides that say, my budget is $5,000. What does that get me? You'll probably pick Mexico, because Mexico, hands down, bangs for your buck. You'll get 5-star service prices that you just can't beat. If you're looking for more cost effective or budget destination, you're going to choose a Punta Cana. You're going to choose a Mexico. You're going to choose a Jamaica. But then I have some brides that, again, they just love travel. They're not worried about necessarily the cost. So they're choosing Turks, or they're going to Italy, or they're getting married in Paris, and they're going to pay. They could pay as much as a traditional wedding would be. And also they're extending it for a week field of fun versus just the weekend. So they're like, if we're going to go all the way to Europe, we might as well, you know, do a week and have different celebrations, different activities throughout the week. So it's kind of up to the bride, their vision of what it is that they want. Location plays a part. Also, time of year. There is a such thing as high season, low season, shoulder season, as well as how many guests attend. You know, most destination weddings, they're usually 40 to 50 guests, a lot smaller than a traditional. But I know brides who invite their whole family. The 100 people are coming. So that affects the cost as well.
Yeah, so that's a great segue. So talking about, you know, family and friends, and, you know, sometimes you might have people who haven't been out of the country before or who don't really like going far away from their home, or there might be health problems in the family that might limit people who want to travel. So do you have tips that you give to brides and grooms on how to speak to their family and friends about convincing them that it's a great idea?
Yes, that's actually one of my blog posts I have on my website.
Oh, awesome.
It's how to convince your family a destination wedding is a good idea. it's kind of managing your expectations. So when it comes down to it, it's about you and your soon-to-be spouse. So at the end of the day, there are going to be people that don't like your decision. There might be people that don't even like the person you're marrying. So it's kind of going back to managing your expectations and knowing that to be okay with some people not being thrilled about the idea of you having a destination wedding. Because it's okay, because it's really not about them. That's what brides have to understand. It's really about them and not the guests. At that first kind of point that you decide to do this, it's about you. But with that said, I'm one of those people that say test the climate. So what you want to do is get some feedback from the people that matter most, your VIPs. Like, I would not get married without my grand. She's 89 years old and she made the trip. So if my grandmother would have been like, I call her grand, not coming, then it wouldn't have happened. So the people that you really want there, whether it's your uncle, your cousin, or your best friend from fourth grade, kind of throw out some fillers, you know, kind of test it, you know, get a heads up about, oh, I'm thinking about this. What are your thoughts? Because, you know, people are just going to tell you like straight up like, oh, gosh, you're considering that, or this would be so much fun. But then the people that are still kind of like, I don't know about this. It's all about educating. So that's where a good travel agent or wedding planner or someone that is experiencing your destination can kind of shed some light, because most of the times people fear things they don't know or understand. So it goes back to anything else. You have to explain to them, you know, the perks of it, kind of why are you choosing to do this? But kind of, oh, this could be a vacation. It's actually, because really the knot for this 2017 year is actually cheaper to attend a destination wedding than it is a traditional wedding. They've done it. It's like $673 to $703, because you got to think, if you do an at-home wedding, there's still people that have to travel, right? But right. They don't take in the cost of a hotel and or travel, and if you go out that night and food and all of that. So you're actually spending more, even if you do a traditional wedding at home. So it's about educating those who are going. So if people are like, oh gosh, Mexico is not safe. Okay, well, Mexico is a country like the United States. So is the United States not safe? Is it the state of Florida? Is it Georgia? You know, then you have to break down cities. Is it Gainesville? Is it, you know, Miami? The same thing to be said about Mexico. So as long as you give them that information, which is usually your travel agent is really going to help you to kind of ease your guest fears and concerns, then you're good. But then also, you don't want to be a bridezilla. Make it easy on your guests. More over communicate. You'll have to say things multiple times. You'll have to explain things, but you want to make it easy on them. And that's why most destination weddings are in the Caribbean, Mexico. And then again, we have some of those in Europe, but they're not getting married in South Africa or Alaska, Antarctica. You know, it's one of those things that they're trying to make it easy on guests, because they already know it's like, oh gosh, they're spending money. They have to get on a plane. So they're not going to go somewhere that's going to be 20-hour plane ride and cost $3,000. They want to look for affordable options, nonstop flights, that type of thing. So that's what I would do if I'm talking to brides about getting everyone on board.
Okay. And I think that you also have a blog post about the etiquette of wedding traveling or destination weddings.
Oh, yeah. Like, uh-huh.
Yeah. So how does the etiquette change between, you know, an at-home wedding versus a destination wedding?
So one of my big things that when I talk to brides or guests, it's usually one of those things where they invite their family or they invite a friend. And then that one friend invites 10 of their friends because they're thinking, oh, well, I'm going over here for this wedding. Why don't you just come too and we'll turn it into our vacation? That is not good guest etiquette. Like it kind of goes back to traditional wedding. Like if you're a guest and the invitation doesn't say like a plus one or you can add one, it's not okay to invite five of your girlfriends or your cousin, aunt or uncle or someone hasn't met. Because at the end of the day, it's still a wedding. So the kind of formal etiquette that you would normally have that really probably doesn't apply to destination wedding, when it comes to that, it does, if that makes sense. You know, like, also, I will say, if you have a travel agent that is working with the bride and they've held a block of rooms or they're in a group, even if you can get it for, you know, lower, or you have a friend that is your own travel agent you want to use, just book within the group. You know, don't make it harder, because what you don't know is the bride and groom, they get special perks and privileges when everyone books with the group. That kind of keeps their costs down, as well as they get private check-ins and, again, different benefits. So when you go outside the group and say, oh, I've just saw something on Book It for $100 less, now you're not included in the group. The headcount, sometimes they end up having to pay more for you. And at the end of the day, when you get $100 less on Book It, when your flight is delayed or you get stuck somewhere, now you can't call the bride's, you know, agent and say, hey, can you help me with this? Because you didn't book inside the group. So there's no liability. You know, it's kind of like a safe thing, if that makes sense. Those are two big ones that I get most of the time.
So are there also changes in what the bride and groom are expected to pay for, or is it kind of similar standard?
Yeah, it's kind of, so I'm not sure if it's a misconception, but most brides and grooms only are going to pay for themselves and or VIPs. Like maybe some brides will say, I want to pay for my mom, or I want to pay for my grandma, or my best friend since first grade. She's out of work, or, you know, we really want her to be there, so we're going to pay. But most of the time, brides, especially if they do an all-inclusive package, it's kind of like you're on your own, unless it's traditional kind of wedding ceremonies and or reception. And when I say like different events, so at a traditional wedding, you know, at the reception, of course, the food is provided, or if they do a cocktail or rehearsal dinner. Well, the same is I will say that is the same for a destination wedding. So if the bride and groom have different activities for the group, that is something they pay for. So if they want to have a rehearsal dinner or a welcome party when they get there, or cocktail hour, ceremony, if it has to do with any of kind of the bridal activities, then they're going to be expected to pay for it. But everything else, like your flight or you getting there, that's kind of on your own. Which I think at a traditional wedding, they're not paying for your hotel or your flight to their wedding either.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So do people typically go with a full service wedding planner when they're doing, you know, out of the country weddings? Or do they still, you know, like to have choice and be able to choose, you know, music, choose venue, choose a cake, or, you know, whatever? Or is it basically all done for them?
Yeah. So the thing with hiring a wedding planner, so there's two different ways you can do it, of course, to hire a wedding planner or not to hire. So if you get married in Mexico, Caribbean, most of the all-inclusive kind of resort, they have an on-site coordinator that will do everything for you. So if you have a travel agent, they work with the on-site coordinator, they introduce you, you choose all your packages from the cake, the food, musician, what color flowers you want. It's kind of all in one, kind of one-stop shop. You don't have to do anything. However, I always tell brides that I still encourage them to have a planner that is there with them, or a travel agent that offers those services, because at the end of the day, that on-site coordinator works for the resort. So, you know, you don't have someone on your team working for you. So the vendor is going to try to upsell you and say, hey, what about this, you know, particular location? Or they're not going to tell you that you can get the cheaper $25 flowers, because they're going to sell you the 50 or 60, because at the end of the day, you know, they work for the resort. Now, are they going to be helpful and they're going to make sure everything's in line? Yes, perfect. But you want an advocate, and sometimes language barriers. If you have someone that can talk to them, you might not understand, or even with the email, I kind of told you about Caribbean time, they might not get back to you. It might be a frustrating process. So if you had someone that could alleviate that stress is always better. But for my brides that are getting married in Europe and kind of far-flung destinations, Africa, definitely you need a wedding planner. I wouldn't just rely on a travel agent. I would definitely suggest you to get a planner that actually specializes in your destination, because that is not a one-stop shop, and they'll have to coordinate vendors from the cake to the food, from the photographer to whatever you want on the ground. Now, you can work with a destination management company and your travel agent can help you with that, but you want somebody, again, to make sure all the details come together. So if you're doing more of a Caribbean kind of all-inclusive, you know, package, you don't really need a wedding coordinator because they'll do everything for you. And they'll go over it. You can go down and do a site visit. They call it bridal dress rehearsal. And you actually get a credit towards your wedding if you come down before. So you usually get $500 off your food and beverage. So it's usually kind of a good deal. We actually went ahead before we got married to go down there and scope out the scene. You get to do cake tasting, check everything out. I took a bride to Jamaica to visit her resort and kind of check out the restaurants, get the lay of the land, so then she could go back and tell guests what to do, where her favorite restaurant was, and that type of thing. So they offered that as well.
So I heard you say Africa in there, and that seems like a little bit of an unusual choice for a wedding destination to me. Are there any other exotic or unusual destinations that people like to choose?
Well, there was a bride that just got married in Thailand, and it was a beautiful wedding, but I mean, geez, after the flights and, you know, you have to, it comes down to, you know, your family, you know, your guests. And also, what if somebody is from the Philippines and you want to get married in the Philippines? Now you have your spouse who's from there. So it's a little different. You know what I mean? Like, it depends on where your family lives. I have a bride right now. She's getting married in Jamaica in December, but her husband's from Jamaica. So that changes the dynamics, because then you don't have all these people that are traveling from the United States. You have people that are traveling in the country. Or let's see, what are some other destinations? I probably like Australia. Not that it's weird or kind of, it's just because it's so far from the United States. So depending on where you're from and your family and where you live, and also how many people, because if it's just you and your soon to be spouse and you're going over there with 10 people, then yeah, Africa is fine, because you don't have to worry about coordinating 100 different family members or 50 or 60 or sending invites. It's a smaller kind of intimate destination. And then it kind of turns more into a group travel booking versus a full fledged destination wedding that takes other things in consideration, where you're doing, you know, the extra vendors and the cake and toss and the, you know, champagne toast and all of that. Because if you're just trying to be low key, and especially destination weddings at first, people thought they were for second marriages. So it used to be that destination weddings were big for people who were getting remarried because they wanted something low key. They would just go off and maybe, you know, their daughter, son, and a mother, or, you know, grandmother would go. So it was one of those things. But now it's trending up to where it's first time marriages. But it was one of those where, okay, we don't want to make a big deal. We've already done this. I'm not going to wear the white dress. You know, we want to go and start our honeymoon off at the same time. So destination weddings worked out perfectly for that. So if it is a second marriage and or you are trying to be low key, then having your wedding farther away is okay, because, you know, those are less details and less people that you have to coordinate and try to work with and plan.
Yeah, I guess it depends on your family on whether a location is considered bizarre or not. Because I know some people, you could just tell them you're going to Mexico and they would imagine being in the jungle, you know, dodging bullets from FARC rebels or something. But, you know, if you have a cultured enough family, maybe you could go to Africa or somewhere like that and it not be considered odd at all.
Yeah. Or if, say, you're African and you have family that still live in the village, like I have another bride, she's from Haiti. She's going to get married in Haiti. Like, your family's in Haiti. So it kind of goes by, you know, your nationality, your experience, where your family, again, kind of what you said, if you're cultured, because again, like you said, if there's some people that would go think Mexico and they'd be like, oh my gosh, like, we're in third world country.
So do you get to travel and go to all of these locations as the wedding planner, or do you kind of do everything and coordinate everything remotely?
So I have different packages. So like, I kind of have the ultimate destination wedding package, and that's kind of the booking the travel, management of guest travel, assisting you with on-site items, working with your on-site wedding coordinator, that type of thing. Then I do travel management only. And then I kind of have a destination wedding kickstart consulting, which is kind of like what we're doing now. I do with my brides. It's kind of brainstorming an hour or two. You pick my brain, you get, you know, what do you need to know? Here are the X, Y, and Z steps, how to plan your destination wedding. Here, make sure you have this worksheet. Make sure to ask your on-site wedding coordinator these questions. Kind of some of the freebies I have on my website, worksheets and kind of download kind of free printables and packing lists. I kind of go over with the bride kind of, okay, Courtney, we need help, but we don't really need everything. We just need to know what do we not know that we need to know. So I kind of have different packages. So some brides will say, hey, Courtney, we want you there, especially because if they have a lot of guests. So I have a wedding in August and there's 60 something people. So there's 35 rooms. So when they get there, we're going to cross our fingers. Nothing happens or nothing goes wrong, which it probably won't. But if there was something wrong and I'm not there as a travel coordinator, then if somebody's in the wrong room or they book, you know, Uncle Johnny in a 2-bedroom suite should be in a 1, or Uncle Johnny has a daughter and they have her in a king bed. You know, it's good that if I'm there and I can talk to them and I can get it straight out, they don't have to go to the bride like, well, you know, what's Courtney's number? Or we had a king, you know, we had 2 double beds instead of a king or things like that. That doesn't happen very often, but because I'm one of those people that I want to be there and I want to make sure everything goes on, then even if sometimes they don't request, I might show up a day or two before and just make sure everything's straight and then fly out, you know, because I believe that that's my reputation. I want it to be perfect. You got to think this is somebody's wedding. It's not a regular travel experience. It's kind of one of those once in a lifetime things, and it can make or break. And I don't want them to have any stress. You know, that's what they're hiring me for, to take all of the extra, you know, guests who don't have a passport, need help with that. Johnny needs to get to here. They lost their luggage. Like, the bride has a million other things to think about as well as the groom. So I want to be there to kind of take that pressure off and say, hey, you get there, you have the best time of your life. I'll worry about your guests and make sure everything's set up. So to answer your question in the long run, yes and no. So I do travel with destination wedding groups, but I don't have to travel. And I've been one of those people where I've just done the travel management only and everything's turned out perfect. People have gotten there because I do kind of check in with random guests. I just kind of choose 3 or 4, like, how's your stay? Is everything going well? You know, did you get your resort certificates? And I might do that to 4 or 5 different guests throughout your group. And then just checking in on the bride when they get there. I also call down to the resort and just say, hey, checking on my girl. You know, how's everything going? Is my guy enjoying themselves? That type of thing. So, yeah.
That's really awesome. Yeah. So one of the things that Zach and I are like super interested in, so we both work remotely, and that allows us to travel and kind of move around a lot. And so we're both like very fascinated in other, you know, careers and jobs that allow you that same type of freedom. And so it really does sound like your job too. Like, you know, you move around a lot, but you're still maintaining and managing your business because it really is kind of location independent because you're coordinating and working with people all around the globe.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
I love it. I was one of those people that said, I'm always going to own my own business. I didn't know what it was or what it looked like. My dad's an entrepreneur. And with my husband's career, you know, never knowing where we're going to be. And I'm just like, oh my gosh. And then, you know, it just hit me. I'm like, this is perfect. And last week, so it's NCAA tournament time. So last week we were just in Dallas for NCAA. We lost. Sorry. Oh, sucks. But we're just in Dallas. And here I am, you know, sending quotes to clients. And then the week before that, where were we? We were in St. Louis for the SEC tournament. And then the week before that, I was in Puerto Rico. So it's like really a dream come true because I love traveling. I love helping people. And it still gives me the flexibility to still be with my husband, my family, and, you know, do what I love. So it's been good.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing because you get to actually, you know, take off and pick up and go with your husband and be yeah. there to support him through the losses and celebrate with him through the wins and, you know, still maintain and run your own business while not making any career sacrifices of your own because he has to move all the time. And I think that's really amazing. And it's kind of just an empowering story to hear about that too.
Took me a minute to come to it. I just was like, I've got to do something, you know, what is it? I knew I was like destined for something else.
So going back for a minute to the travel and the destination weddings, do you think there are mistakes that people commonly make if they try to do this on their own versus using somebody like yourself?
Yeah. And that's funny. You just asked me that because I was just writing something about using a honeymoon. It's more of honeymoon planner, but it applies to destination weddings as well. And I would think the value that I bring or any other agent and or planner would bring is relation. You know, nowadays it's about relationships. And there are certain perks and benefits that you get from working with an agent that you wouldn't be able to get by yourself. You know, sometimes I'll be honest, sometimes you might find a price online that's going to be better than my price. However, what I can do when you get there and you show up and there's a personal touch that you've told me about when we've talked, you wouldn't get that from online. You know, there's still something about that communication, interaction with people. It's kind of like when I was in Puerto Rico, I met with three or four different people that own bed and breakfasts. And now I can say, hey, Molly, I have this. She might say we're booked, but now I can call Molly and say, I have this girl that wants to come. You have this. She's going to make room for you. You know, it's one of those things where you're building relationships with different travel suppliers and partners. So those special perks are if you can't get this flight or if you can't get this room or this person has some special experience in this destination and you want to make it even, you know, more VIP or you want them to be treated like royalty, that's something I can do. That's something agents can do. They can upgrade or up-level your experience. But also, people don't understand that when they're booking things online, that they're still paying fees. So that when you add up stuff, you see it, but you don't really know what that fee is. It's like service. They put a bunch of different things in there. But when a trip goes wrong, you miss a flight, your resort closes, or you book this thing and now you get there, nobody's there to pick you up. Who are you going to call? You know, 1-800 numbers. And just say, for instance, we just had a crazy hurricane season. All those resorts that were closed and you just booked on your own, that 1-800 number was probably busy for how many hours, how many days? You know, like, could people even get through to someone? So it's the fact that you have someone working for you 24/7 from the time you start planning until after you arrive home. So what I see is sometimes they don't value or they don't understand the value that agents bring. But getting off agent spiel and, you know, kind of putting my two cents, more of just mistakes travelers make in general, destination weddings, whether honeymoons, romance travel, or just going on a vacation 2 hours away, they overpack. They're bringing everything for their special occasion and half the stuff they don't wear. So that's one thing I would say, you know, kind of away from mistakes travelers make when they don't book with an agent, I would say that value piece, but then also the overpacking. I mean, that's one of those things that even if you use an agent, you probably could still overpack. So you'd be like, what? What are you talking about, Courtney? But it's one of those things that is so common that people forget about. I also say when they book their flights on their own, sometimes they do too short of a layovers. Like, so if you're in Europe, a layover in London, like if you have 30 minutes, that's probably not good enough. You're not booking enough time between flights. But some people don't know that because if you've never been there or you're not familiar with the airport, you wouldn't know that. But if you had someone that was knowledgeable in that area, then they could assist you with that. The buying insurance. People don't like buying travel insurance. I don't like buying travel insurance. But it's a biggie because especially now I live in Florida with hurricane season. Like if I spend for my destination wedding $5,000, $10,000, even my honeymoon, if I spend $2,000 or $3,000, to me now that's an investment. That's not like a little trip to DC. Like you're spending the average bride and groom for their honeymoon spends $5,000. So you can't tell me that for $29 or $30, it's not worth it to protect it. You know what I mean? Like, because if anything can happen and insurance covers your medical expenses, baggage loss, flight delays, and nowadays with all-in-one flight coverage, if you get that all-in-one flight and or land, the resorts, say if you see a cheaper price online, they'll refund you the price of that with that insurance plan. People, it's more of those things that people are like, oh, I'm going, I don't need it. But I don't think they know all of the benefits in certain plans. So it's one of those things you have to ask or you have to read the fine print and nobody's really reading that. I'll also say being a tourist. And that's funny because a lot of agents will take you to touristy places. And I'm one of those that like, oh my gosh, I can't see the Eiffel Tower again. Like, yes, if you've never been to Paris, you need to see the Eiffel Tower. But I'm meaning more of staying in the hotel or the resort the whole trip. If you go to Mexico, for instance, you only stay on the resort. You really didn't even go to Mexico. You went to the resort. Did you even see it? So being a tourist is not kind of a hashtag smart traveler type of thing. If you want a true, authentic experience, you have to live like the locals. You have to, you know, ask your bellman where he eats or get off the resort, ask your driver where they go. And you know what? It'll save you tons of money because you won't be eating that overpriced, expensive, touristy food. You'll be getting real food and it'll be cheaper. So those are a few. Did that kind of answer your question?
Yeah, that was a lot of information and a lot of stuff that you don't always think about. So real quick, I know you said that people can make a mistake by traveling with too much and, you know, spending too much money on getting too much stuff down there. But are there any particular travel accessories that you found are really important to bring and keep with you?
Ooh, that is a good one because I'm one of those that like just go by myself. You know, I'm one of those people that pack light. People are like, I know Courtney is not going with that little bag. And I'm like, yes, I am. Let's see, some travel.
Well, that's a skill.
I'm not taking a bunch of stuff. Like, you should see this bag that I took for like a week trip. People are like, are you kidding me, Courtney?
I would say
some accessories. Just yeah. And I think I do have a blog post on that. And I think I showed the picture of my bag. Yeah, you had to see it. Yeah, I think I put the picture of it. And they're like, no way, you didn't go a week. Like, I try to cram everything into that one little bag. But let's see, some travel accessories. I mean, I don't go anywhere without like my iPad or phone. I know technology is kind of like, how are you going on vacation or how are you going somewhere and you have all of this. But my camera, which nowadays I feel like you don't really need to take your camera because now these phones are like mini cameras are even better and your sticks. But like, I'm always taking earbuds or headphones, that type of stuff. But I use reusable plastic bags. So it's not like really travel accessory, just stuff that like plastic bags, because then you can put your makeup in it or like a wet bathing suit. But now I'm like obsessed with this. It's called Wonder Wet Bags for your bathing suit. They're so cute. And so now I use that. Probably just like sunglasses, charger pack. There's not really travel accessories that I like are a must of what I need to bring. I usually go with my Calpak backpack. I love that. I usually take what is that? Emergency or like airborne. I always take those with my packs because when I travel and I'm on the plane, I just feel like it's really germy. And I could get sick. So, and I'm always traveling. So I'm like, let me put this emergency in my bag, or like none active hydration tablets. They're kind of like Gatorade without sugar, electrolytes, that type of thing, but not really big on the travel accessories. I mean, phone, iPad, sunglasses, good pair of sneakers, earbuds. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, just keep it to the basics. That's
yeah.
So you mentioned a little bit about traveling destinations for other type of events. What type of trends are you seeing for like anniversaries, destination planning, or I think we read about baby moons and what are those?
Yeah. Those are okay. So these life events that people are traveling for these days are crazy. So baby moons are huge, or mini moons, like before the baby's born, where you and your loved one is kind of like a couple's little getaway, and they have like Zika free ones now. Like they're having crazy posts. That's a trendy. Baby moons are huge. Zika free places for you and your spouse to hang out, kind of.
So did you say baby moons are after the baby is here?
No, before the baby moon.
Oh, okay.
I mean, before the baby's born.
All right.
Yeah, that's kind of like your last hoorah before the baby comes. Because when the baby comes, you're not doing any vacation right away.
Apparently, when I was a newborn, my parents took me to Acapulco, Mexico. Hey. I guess they were braver than most.
They must be. It's kind of one of those kind of, because you know you're not supposed to fly after 36 weeks, I think.
I doubt they knew that back then.
Yeah, they're like, whatever, we'll take them. because there's like travel restrictions. But now these resorts, it's crazy. They're offering like baby boom packages, special mommy spa massage, like all this stuff. But I always tell people from the window, 18 to 24 weeks is supposed to be a sweet spot for you to go on this little trip, romantic trip. And most of the time, it's not too far because, of course, you know, people are having babies before their time is up. But still, it's kind of that relaxation, rekindling, that type of thing. But also, another one that's a big one is divorce parties. I know that's crazy, but it's called Untying the Knot. So, yeah, like the Breathless Resort has this Untying the Knot party, and like they really get wild. They get kind of after it. So there's divorce parties or Untying the Knot, baby moons. Still huge are family reunions, you know, big birthday celebrations, kind of milestones. So that 30th, that 40th, you know, that 21st, that type of thing. So that's what people are traveling for, more groups. But I will say solo travel is on the, like, upright. Like, more people are just saying, hey, I don't care if you can't go, I'm going. And I'm going to travel the world. So solo travel is becoming huge.
Yeah, I feel like people who try solo travel too often become advocates for it afterwards. Like,
yeah,
we've talked to a lot of people here on the show who are just so into it that they say even if you have you're in a relationship or you have a travel buddy, they still recommend it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty dependent on Sarah, so I'm not sure if I could do that.
I do a lot of solo travel just because my husband's schedule. So I do a lot of travel with him as well, but for work. So when I'm traveling, it's like, I need to go check out this hotel, this Airbnb or this resort. So I do a lot. My husband, it's so funny because just last week, he's like, he put me on a travel ban because I went to Mexico, Martin Luther King weekend, and I got sick, like really bad, and like didn't even make it through all my site visits. And I haven't really had an experience like that. And I travel a lot by myself all the time. So then I was telling him I'm getting ready to go to Puerto Rico again. And he was like, no, Courtney, you're on a travel ban. No more traveling by yourself. You need to have somebody go with you. I'm like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? I'm like, this is for work. But he's like, yeah, I'm putting you on a travel ban. He's like, no more solo travel. He's like, because the last couple of times you've been traveling in January, February, you've gotten sick or you've come back and you haven't been feeling well. So who knows? I enjoy it because I feel like I can do more because my husband kind of slows me down. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, as far as getting sick, I've been tempted to just start wearing those surgeon masks on planes like you see some people do. And, you know, when we were in Japan, it felt like about 50% of people were wearing those even just out in public, and it was not there at all. So I just need to get over any awkwardness and just do that here too and save myself getting sick.
See, that's why I told him. I said, most of the times you're getting sick from being in the airport or on the plane. Like, that's what it is, and touching stuff. So, like, so you're talking about a travel accessory. I always have hand sanitizer in my little bag.
All right. So, that's a lot of information, a lot of good stuff to take in there. So, other than your site, Travel Bash, it's travel-bash.com. Is that how you say it whenever you're giving it out, just speaking it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
I always say, sometimes I don't say dash. I say hyphen because dash bash is so funky.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, hey, put the line in the middle of travel and bash.
Yeah, I was saying dash, but I knew there was some better way to say it. So travel-bash.com sounds a lot better.
Yes.
So travel-bash.com. Is there any other resources that you have to give out that you recommend to people?
Yeah. So kind of going back to some more travel hacks, and if people are looking for different apps, my guys that I like, even though I'm not like an extreme points or like hacker, that type of thing, but like Clint Johnson, the trip hacker, he's really good, or like Nomadic Matt. Like, I follow these people and like some of their tips I use, but again, I'm not like a digital nomad, or like I don't have the time to research and like do all these little things, especially because I'm in the business of, you know, booking trips and all that. So I'm like, hey, don't do it this way. Come to me. I'm not going to lie. But they have some cute, and I shouldn't say cute because it's practical as well, as far as like packing, like rolling your clothes or putting dry sheets in your suitcase. I'm always talking about looking online because I'm Global Entry TSA PreCheck. I have some blogs on that, but I think that's important. But being resourceful, they have good tips for traveling and different apps, or like people are using WhatsApp now for messaging. Like, a lot of my travel suppliers, when I'm in the United States and I'm like, hey, I've got a group coming here, I'm using WhatsApp, Skyscanner, Kayak. So all the kind of apps for travel, Kayak, if you're looking for flights, I always tell people enable private browsing because they are smarter than you and they know when five different people are trying to go to, let's see, London on June 4th, then they're going to raise the price because five different people went to their website. So enable private browsing or use the third party like Skyscanner, Kayak, also Hopper. I use that religiously even for myself to analyze different flights and the best time to buy them, Lounge Buddy. Like, so take a look through those apps, follow those people. I also love Travel and Leisure magazine. It's just kind of more for inspiration. I'm a Pinterest girl, so you know there's good trips and blogs and things like that out there. Accommodations, I always like look at Hostelworld, Oasis, different things like that. But those are just a few resources. I guess some projects that I have coming up, which will be fun. I'm launching kind of a new mini e-course for Destination Wedding Brides. So if you want more information or you're interested, just sign up on my website down at the bottom. All my subscribers, that's kind of where I'm going to launch it first. So if you're signed up for the newsletter, you'll get information. And then I'm launching kind of our first ever Travel Bash Girls Retreat. It's kind of like a girls getaway. It's going to be in July 2019 in Cartagena, Colombia. So a lot of more information and details coming out about that as well.
Nice. Well, you'll have to let us know when either of those things launch so we can have you back on to talk about
it. Yeah. Oh, perfect. Love to.
Yeah. And there's a lot of great information. So thank you so much for coming on the show and being with us today.
No, thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right, so thank you guys for listening, and I hope that you really enjoyed that episode and that you got some good information from it. And I also hope that you were inspired because it is inspiring to, you know, go from wondering what your career path is to deciding, you know, that you're going to take your skills and you're going to apply them and find something that you're truly passionate about and turn it into your career. And I think that she's truly amazing at it. I mean, just looking at her website and reading over her blogs, you can tell that she's very excited about it and loves what she does. And that's just really amazing to me.
Yeah. And be sure to check out Courtney's website at travel-bash.com, as you saw that I learned how to give that out. And then also her Facebook is facebook.com/travelbash with no hyphen in that one. And Twitter, she's at travelbash, also with no hyphen.
Yep. And of course, we'll link to those in the show notes page, as well as some of the some of my favorite blog posts that she mentioned. And then also, if you have any comments, thoughts, questions from this episode or any other episode, please drop us a review or send us an email. Just reach out on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. We love to hear from our listeners. And if you have any specific questions for Courtney, you know, feel free to reach out with those too. And I'm sure she'd be happy to follow up with you or
at very least we'll ask her those questions when we have her on next, because I think, you know, she had a lot of interesting stuff in the pipe that we're going to want to have her on to talk about again sometime soon.
Definitely.
And then those show notes are at thinkingliberty.com/26. And real quick, one really interesting thing that I heard her say that might have even just passed by you was ask your mailman where he eats. I really liked that because she was talking about how to really get the local experience, how to find, you know, good food in a place and not just be eating and seeing all the touristy places. And that stuck out to me. That's not something I really would have thought of, but it's painfully obvious when you think about it, is, you know, the mailman definitely lives in the area, familiar with the area, probably walking around or driving around everywhere, familiar with every back street. So I think that's a great tip that she gave, and it doesn't even have anything to do with the original topic we had her on for, which is destination weddings. But
yeah, but I mean, it is about, you know, getting out there and experiencing what's around you and traveling and really getting the local experience. She did touch on that a lot too, that, you know, if you go to a resort and just stay in the resort, then what's the point? You're not really visiting the country. You're not really getting the feel for it. Mm-hmm. And I think the same can be said about cities. If you go to a city and stay in a 5-star hotel, but you don't like that city block, well, then you're not really getting experience that city. And that did pass me by, Zach, so yeah. Thanks for pointing that out. And it is kind of true, because sometimes the best recommendations you can get from people are by talking to the people that you interact with. So even like your bartenders or your waitresses, and just getting to know them a little bit and finding out what their favorite place is.
Yep. So I guess that's it for this time. Be sure to check out Courtney again at travel-bash.com, Facebook and Twitter, Travel Bash, and then check us out on Facebook, Twitter, at ListenTL on there, and then check out the show notes at thinkingliberty.com/26. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to Thinking Liberty. Subscribe to the show for free on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher at thinkingliberty.com. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, articles by Zach and Sarah, and more. We'll see you next time.